Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.
Time for Mental Health Monday once again. My name is Mick Coyle. It's that time of the week to sit down and talk about mental health, and a guest in the studio who's going to share their story. Stephen Matthews is his name. Great to see you, Stephen. Thank you for
your time.
You're the silent man.
I am indeed, yeah.
Oh, you're trying not to be the silent man. You're very much sort of challenged yourself with this an idea of getting men talking.
I think that's it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? It's very, very difficult for men to open up and talk. So I suppose, with the silent man, it sort of contradicts itself. But I think the whole essence of it is that people, or men in particular, just tend to hold the tongue, and they don't get things out that they want to get out. And it's certainly been the case in my life.
I always wonder when we, and we'll talk a lot about sort of your experience and how you've sort of drawn your own conclusions about mental health and where you see things going in the future. Is there a point, or is there an age, do you think, whereby boys become men, or boys stop talking, or boys suddenly think, oh, I can't share emotion? Because, you know, there'll be loads of little kids who will talk all day. There must be something we have culturally that exists that boys suddenly go, oh, I can't talk the way I used to. I have to watch what I say now.
I think, from my perspective, I think that it's a bit long in the tooth for, because I think it stems from when I was a kid. There was never really any sort of talking between the family members, especially from my dad, who was, the role model at the time. And I never really sort of got encouraged to speak out. And so anything that ever went wrong, I sort of dealt with in my own mind. And I guess over time, it's built up and built up and built up. And I don't think that there's any sort of age range, really. It could happen at any time. You just all of a sudden clam up, or you're not encouraged to do it in the first place.
Your story is a complex one, many different factors to it as well. Alcoholism is included in it as well. Money, death, trauma, and relationship breakdowns as well. Where do you want to start in terms of your story? You mentioned there growing up.
Yeah, I think that, first of all, it was, I'll have to get it straight, that there was no problems at home at all. It was just, when I think back, the role model that I wanted was my dad, and he wasn't there because he was probably the same sort of type of person that many of men was at that time, where they finished work and they went to the pub and that was it, that they'd done their job and they didn't think that they had to worry about, family members and stuff like that. One thing that does stick out in my own mind was I was in the Winchester Arms in Anfield just before the Liverpool game, and we were talking to a guy there, and I wanted to play for Liverpool boys, and I was adamant, and I got my dad to ask this fella, and he said, is he good enough? And my dad's in full, listening distance, if you like, he said no, and it sort of broke me, and I went, I thought I was being encouraged to at that age, and then I just thought to myself, well, what's the point? I'm not saying anything because I'll just get shot down, and then there was a little bit of, I would say, abuse, which I've only really thought about fairly recently, and I don't really want to go into too much detail,
sure.
But I've only recently found out that it happened to somebody else who's very close to me as well, so I was getting the impression that children should be seen and not heard, and whatever happens, you just had to put up and shut up and just get on with it, and it just sort of escalated and escalated. Then we came to Hillsborough. I never ever saw counselling after that. I think I had 10 minutes with a psychologist, if you like, at the hospital, because I tried to end my life because I felt so guilty about it all. And about 10 minutes later, I was discharged from hospital after spending a few days in there. And nothing was spoken of. No real help was offered at all, so it was a case, and no one in the family knew how to deal with it. So it was a case of me sort of thinking that I was the lucky one, and I didn't want anything else to come of it, because there was people a lot worse off than myself. Then we get to, after that, there was an episode that I was in a relationship, and then it was on and off, and one thing led to another. I was accused, if you like, of having a baby. And it was a long, drawn-out process, a lot of arguments, a lot of to-ing and throwing, but I didn't have the confidence to challenge what I was being accused of, and it transpires that I had to go through all the court to find out that I wasn't the father. So, you know, again, after the incidents which I've mentioned before, it just seems that everything was happening to me, and I couldn't understand why. I didn't understand why I couldn't cope with these items in my life. We go on from there. There was a relationship that I was in at the time. I've now got my son from, which I'm absolutely delighted with, but the relationship broke down. And the main thing from that was that I just didn't want to become me dad. I didn't want to become the part-time dad that I thought that he was. He wasn't, but I thought that he was. So that's one of the main things that really hit home. Not in a good place financially. There was a lot of unemployment at the time. I was a printer. Earning decent money on the grand scale of things. And I just, it was just one of those things that happens, and it happens to everybody, you know, these things happen in your life. But I overspent. I was trying to keep me head above water with working on taxis and doing whatever I could do to get money just to pay bills. And in the end, I just said, I can't do this. And I just said, I'm going bankrupt. And I did. And I hated myself for it. I put myself under tremendous pressure. I think when I look back to even like sort of get through the day, I was working long hours and not getting much for it, if you like it, because I had a family and I was actually studying because of the unemployment. I went into college and then university. So, you know, it wasn't all bad, but in the end, the bankruptcy took its toll and I had to start again.
In terms of and any one of those sort of individual sort of issues that you raised there must have, you know, played havoc with your thought processes for a million and one different reasons as well.
Yeah.
I mean, we talk about, you know, Hillsborough, there's an ongoing court case at the moment. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, means we can't sort of discuss some of the issues around that. But your experience of the accusations that were made against you, the bankruptcy as well. And this was over a relatively short period of time, or was it just like one thing and then that would settle and then something else would come and then the next thing?
I remember talking to my mum and she said, oh God, what else is going to happen with you, you know? And it's it did actually seem that you clear one hurdle and then the other one was coming up quickly, a bit like the Grand National, I suppose. Like, but it was just, you know, I suppose I was just waiting to get to Beaches Brook. And
but did you find that with each of the, you were sort of less equipped to deal with each problem as it came? That the escalation of events were diminishing your ability to be resilient?
I was resigned to just acceptance of this is it. You know, I've got to just get on with it and just accept whatever comes my way. I sort of felt a little bit of blame, if you like. I don't know whether that's the right expression, but I felt a bit of blame. For why all this happened. I must have thought that there was something that I'd done previously. I don't know what. I was, you know, looking up to the heavens for God knows what reason, just asking for help and guidance, and it never seemed to come, you know. And you're right, it just was one thing after the next. And I didn't have the coping mechanism or the strategy to even contemplate thinking about, you know, a way forward or a way out. It was just plodding along and getting day by day going on that way.
After the attempted suicide and the time you spent there, if there had been a larger safety net there, or if there had been a greater intervention there from various different places, if you like, would you have been better equipped, do you think, to take on life as it came at you later on in terms of the experience that you had post-suicide attempt?
I don't know. I mean, the issues leading up to it obviously were catastrophic for a lot more people than myself. But thinking back to it, like, I mean, I don't even know whether or not if there were other mechanisms in place, I don't know whether or not that would have helped. You know, I mean, it's certainly moved on since then. And you know, it's a lot more in the news, obviously, and widespread. And I think that slowly but surely people are actually realising that it's not a stigma, it is actually something that needs to be tackled. And hopefully, like, you know, that people can move forward with it and actually start to tackle it instead of thinking that there's nothing there to help.
You mentioned talking with your mum.
Mm-hmm.
Was your mum your main sounding board? We talk about conversations and getting men talking. Was your mum always a good place to go?
Yeah, yeah. No talking with friends, very rarely talking with friends. My mum was always the sounding board. She was, I suppose, if you like, the matriarch and patriarch of the family. And she, again, she wouldn't know what to say or do, and it's not through any fault of hers. I guess it was just a case of how everybody was brought up at the time. You know, nobody, they say, like, life doesn't come with the manual, does it? So they just did the best at what they could do, and you try and tackle the problems that your kids give you. You know.
At what point did the phrase mental health first sort of come into your mind, or did you become aware of it? Because some of the things you've talked about there, financial problems, worries, stress, grief, are all phrases that a lot of people use. At what point did you think, hang on, this is affecting my mental health, the way I'm thinking about things?
I think that, like, it was going back, I'd say about 3 or 4 years. About 3 years, I would say. And I was starting to get quite argumentative with my current partner now, Alison, and just making irrational sort of decisions. And I was still sort of reverting back to what had happened in the past and trying to figure out an excuse of why this happened and why I was in this position. And she suggested you need to go for some counselling. And I was of the impression, now that's all gone. This has all happened years ago. I don't need to. I'm strong enough. I can do all this. But then I thought about it, and we had conversations, and I realised, actually, yeah, you know, it won't do any harm. So I guess it was about 3 years ago that I thought that mental health could be a possible problem for me.
That's quite an awakening, though, isn't it? Because, you know, we're talking, what, 2015, 2016?
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, we're well into the 21st century, and all those factors which you talked about there, and then it was the intervention from a partner who goes, mm-hmm. Well, actually, maybe that's the conversation that might change things. What was your next step after that?
I think there was a lot of arguments, and me just saying that I don't need help, but me going back and then coming back and deciding that, yeah, it's a good thing for me to do. So I think I went, first of all, for CBT. Alison said it helped tremendously for the initial period of time, but then I reverted back to the way that I was behaving, and it was just total irrational behaviour. So the conversations ensued again, and it was up and down, and, you know, to looking back, I put her through absolute hell, I suppose. And I don't really know, you know, how she put up with me for the length of time that she did, or she has done, I should say.
And now you're almost evangelical in your desire to get men to talk and to share. So what was the thing then? Was it about those conversations, repeated conversations with your partner? Was it a firmer form of counselling or therapy?
I think that, because last year was the first time that I thought about it. Alison mentioned, because she has her own blog that she writes on, and it's quite successful as well. But she suggested that I should do it. It may help, it may not. You know, it may help others, it may not. So I spoke about it last year, and I thought, yeah, okay, I'll do it. But then I had a relapse, and I just didn't do anything, and I started just reverting back to the way that I was. And it was just before Christmas. I was off work. I just couldn't cope with work. I took some time off, and she said, well, why don't you just do it now? Give yourself a purpose. Look at writing, you know. And I thought, well, I've never written anything really in my life, only when I was in school. So I did, and I started, like, writing things down, and she created the website for me, which was great, you know. It just started from there. Of course, it's early days, and things seem to be going okay. It's the subjects that I try and touch on are just how I sort of perceive life to be, and certain issues that I can deal with, certain issues that I can't, obviously. But I'm a lot more, I think, equipped to actually ask the question, do I need some sort of other help or guidance? Alison's always the rock there that says, you know, yeah, you know, go for this, or what do you think about this? Because she's probably the only person who's actually challenged me to think outside of my own little bubble. So she was the one who burst that bubble and actually opens up a lot more sort of ideas, if you like, for me to continue doing what I'm doing.
TheSilentMan.co.uk is the website that's up there as well. The Silent Man, thoughts, resources and solutions for men avoiding intimate lives. Mm-hmm. intimate lives, that's quite a strong phrase, that, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that men have a tendency, as I said earlier, just to climb up and not, I mean, even with the nearest and dearest, they tend just to not tackle it, I would say, you know, unless like they get harassed by, you know, the partner or whatever, pretty much like what I did. But they need to. I mean, I've always known it as I'll go down to the pub and I'll mask it with alcohol and forget about it, and then I'll tackle it another time, and it just doesn't get resolved. So, you know, the intimate sort of conversations that you must have at any stage in life, you know, whether it's financials, you know, sexual, mental, all these problems that everybody goes through at some stage, you know, they have to be like tackled and spoken about. Otherwise, they become a millstone, if you like, around people's necks, and then the gap can get wider and wider. Luckily for me, Alison's a strong person. She reined me back in, you know, so you're right, it is quite a strong sort of tagline, if you like, but I think it's important.
The silentman.co.uk is the website. There's a line in there from the Gentleman's Rule Book. Gentleman's Rule number 14, understand and utilise the power of conversation. It's only number 14, that. So it's not a high priority, though. We need to get it higher up the list.
I think so. So hopefully the more people that can hear about it, the better. And hopefully we can take it forward.
The power of conversation as well. Yeah, sometimes you mentioned it, you know, alcohol and the use of alcohol before.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes those, you almost have conversations in the pub where you've had a couple of drinks and you feel a little bit more like you can talk. But then if that goes on a little bit too long and you drink a little bit too much, it then becomes part of an unhelpful conversation, or a conversation you later regret because you felt like you've had too much, which is why I'm always a little bit unsure about saying to people, oh, have the conversation in the pub. Mm. I found very helpful conversations there, but then, you know, alcohol hasn't been a factor in there, and I don't drink too much. Do you find the pub was a helpful place? Was a good place?
I suppose it has its benefits, but I think the danger of it is you're talking in a pub and, you know, you start to have a good time and you've had like 3 or 4 pints and you think, well, okay, I've got the confidence now to talk about this, but it's lost because, you know, what you need to say is not necessarily somebody's interest, although they may be your friend. They're out for a good time and they're out for, you know, just to forget about the worries, if you like, and just have a drink with the mates. It's funny that in my experience, men have very rarely rung the mates up and said, you know, listen, can we meet in Costa or something, or, you know, let's grab a coffee. I'm sure it does happen a lot more now, but, you know, when I was going up in my 20s and 30s even, it wasn't heard of. It was just a case of you get on with it and that's it. So
I always think that there's like almost a duty of care, particularly for men, but women absolutely the same. But men, if they are in that drinking environment, that sometimes you go, oh, such a body got a bit heavy, didn't he, last night? Oh, yeah. What was he going on about? Like,
yeah.
But what are you secretly thinking is, I hope he doesn't mention that again, or I hope that was just the drink talking. Was really, that might have been the one chance that individual had said, you know what, I've had a couple of pints and I'm going to tell you something, and I'm going to hoping that you're going to respond. And actually what it needs is somebody the cold light of day the following morning or the following afternoon saying, do you want to have a chat about that?
Yeah.
In a sober environment or over a coffee. Because that's when you can actually go, it was worth you mentioning that. Because there must be people who've reached out in the past and gone, well, I did mention it in the pub once, but nobody said it again. And we almost owe a duty of care to our mates to be able to say, oh, that thing you mentioned, I'll have a chat with you about it.
I think there was, when I tried to commit suicide, I was out, funny enough, in the pub. And I was never one for drinking shorts or anything like that. It was always just pint of lager and, you know, that was it really. And I think I got to the stage where I was speaking to the guy at the time, and all of a sudden I just went, that's it, I'm going to do it tonight. And I didn't say nothing to him. He knew that there was something wrong with me. He kept on saying, are you okay? And I didn't have the confidence, if you like, just to tell him. And I went home and you know, I committed the act, so to speak. And a couple of months later, he said, I knew there was something wrong. I should have just, like, you know, pulled you to one side, as you mentioned, and did something about it. And I think that my response to that was, well, you couldn't. You know, it just wasn't sort of spoken about. You didn't do it. And I think that I'd like to think that nowadays it's a little bit better for people to open up and say, listen, something's really bothering me. Maybe times are changing. Maybe the likelihood of people being in a pub all the time is changing. You know, I think that like the youngsters nowadays are far more in tune with social media, aren't they, than going out and having a drink. So hopefully that might change.
Yeah, but it's that thing, isn't it, where you think, well, alcohol becomes the factor if you're talking in the pub. If you're on social media, there's the noise that comes from social media, that everything's not helpful. It almost feels like you've got to make specific time to just talk about your feelings.
Yeah.
Almost in a completely different environment. Is that something we can do? Is that something you get a sense, and I get a sense from you, that you think things are changing a little bit? But again, everyone's still got very busy lives, haven't they?
Yeah, I think things are changing from what I can see. Social media, unfortunately, is going to play a massive part in everybody's life. And I say unfortunately because it drives people away from talking to each other. You know, there's been instances where I've texted the kids in the house instead of just shouting them, like, you know, would have got shouted when I was a kid. These things, they just move on, becomes easy to people. And it's amazing how difficult conversations can be. But, you know, you're okay to text what you want, but you can't say what you need. So it can be a help, but also a hindrance. And especially if you're looking at other people's lives through social media, you know, it will have an effect on everybody.
What do women do differently? What's the difference between men and women when it comes to talking about mental health?
I think women just get it. I think women just know that they need to say something. Men will just grin and bear it. Women, from my point of view, are far more stronger minded than men. As I say, from my point of view, that men will just go out and mask it under the veil of alcohol, whereas women will go and talk about it. Especially if they're friends, they can pick up. It's like a sixth sense, if you like, for I would say, for women. And I think that's the difference. They are prepared to talk about it, but men aren't. And I think it's a massive problem.
I was thinking, if because of course, you know, you can look at many different women have had mental health problems as well. Yeah, but it would be, if men could just get to the stage that women are at.
Yeah.
If we could just have equality at that level, then men would then be in a better place than they are at the moment. And that's not setting the world on fire, or that's not doing that. That's just looking at equality.
Yeah.
That's just getting to the level of women are where they are in terms of their ability to talk or their ability to spot a problem.
Yeah.
If we could get to that level, that would make a huge difference, wouldn't it?
Well, it would be great. It would be absolutely wonderful because, you know, for every man who's listening here, who's probably getting henpecked by his missus at some stage, and they're probably like, going, I wish you'd just behave yourself and shut up. But you can't. You know, you need to have these conversations, whether you like it or not. It's a part of life. And no matter how difficult it is, you've got to, like, bite the bullet and say, yeah, you know, I'm going to, we'll have this conversation out. You know, I mean, if that parity was there, I think it would be a good place. I think it would be a happier place. You know, there wouldn't be as much sort of worry with a lot of people's lives and on how to approach difficult subjects that obviously encompass every relationship.
You say on your website, it's my intention that speaking from my own personal experience from childhood to now, to give men their own little place of sanctuary, they can engage, discuss and perhaps help others by communicating with each other in an environment free from judgment as well. I get a sense with you, Stephen, that this is still very much a journey for yourself, that this is helpful to you and your own experiences. Well, has this become part of your counselling, your therapy, something that you're able to work on?
I think so. I mean, it's early stages. As I say, it started just before Christmas. And what I do write about it is helpful. There seems to be a little bit of creativity in there. You know, I'm not saying that I'm a great writer, because I'm certainly not. But I've had a couple of comments where I've been compared to Charlotte Bronte, which, you know, I'll take that all day. I mean, I'm happy with that, you know. But it is a therapy. People can have art therapy, can't they? People can have writing therapy, you know. People not talking therapy, all that type of thing. For me, it's working. It's working for me, and I'm hoping to sort of expand it further, obviously.
And where are you getting responses from? because, of course, you're on the internet now, so the conversation with your mates that next year becomes then this global conversation, doesn't
it? Yeah, I think it's getting yourself known. That's the difficult part. But all I can do is turn up, as Alison tells me. You need to turn up every time and write what you're thinking about. Not many people follow it, and that's fine. I'm happy with that at the moment. But on other social media streams, like, people do comment, and like, I've done an article for a magazine, which is being printed in the next few months, I think it is. I've done an interview for Wellness TV, so people are understanding that, like, you know, what I'm trying to do and what I'm trying to achieve. I think it's just having the confidence, which I never had all throughout my life, really, to get up and just do it.
TheSilentMan.co.uk is the website where you can find out more information about Stephen Matthews, his journey so far. And you're also looking to create a bit of a network, a silent network.
Yeah, I think that's the outcome of this site is one is for me to get rid of everything that I would class as, you know, a weight around my shoulders. And men, like I've said, they can't talk to each other. If they can have, like, an area where they can just go on and type away what they need to say, listen, I've had this problem with this, what do you think, guys? And other people may be in the same situation that could offer advice because they may have been through it before. Instead of, like, being on Facebook or, you know, having that difficult conversation when you've had a few pints, it may not work that way. I'm not saying that it will this way, but it gives an opportunity for men to hide behind a screen and say, look, what do you think of this? And it could be anything. It could be any problem at all that they are experiencing. And it's an open forum, really.
You can find a link to the Silent Network through the silentman.co.uk website, and the man behind it, Stephen Matthews. Thank you for sharing your story today on Mental Health Monday. Really appreciate you joining us on the programme.
Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
On Radio City Talk.